This is Sports Wave.
Hello.
We're going back.
Straight to the NSA.
What is going on? This is episode lucky number 13.
Welcome back to the Sports Wave. The last one of the amazing year
of 2020.
The year of COVID.
Yeah, it's been a long year, but we got some big stuff we need to get into as it pertains to college football. And this has been a hot topic in our group chat, and so we need to get into it. We're going to start with the rankings. So just to recap, and you could actually probably pull this up from a couple years ago. I'm pretty sure the same four teams have made it every single year the college football playoff has existed. Not really, but it feels like it. So we have...
For the most part, I think there was one year that Oklahoma made it. That was...
Yeah, and I guess last year with LSU making it, they were kind of the runaway team. But yeah, so lots of controversy around this. And so basically we have Alabama, number one. We have Clemson, number two. Shocker. And then we have Ohio State. That's the one I'm kind of iffy about at number three. But I'm like, whatever. I guess they got in. And then probably the most controversial of the four is Notre Dame, who just got railroaded against Clemson in the ACC championship. So let's start. What are y'all opening thoughts on just the playoff alone and what how it fell?
Rigged is how it felt.
Yeah.
It seems like whoever has the most viewers or highest donating alumni make it. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, it was okay. It's just the Notre Dame should not be in that after getting completely destroyed. Clemson.
I concur. So my thoughts are, I'm not super surprised, but I am a little surprised. Because as we all just watched, Notre Dame got absolutely, I don't want to say absolutely, but like,
I mean,
definitively,
that was pretty
beaten down by Clemson.
Conclusive.
Yeah. I feel like there's little doubt which team was better. And, you know, if anything looks like a fluke, the Notre Dame win over Clemson looks a little more suspect considering, you know, the Clemson players that were out returned, and when, you know, Clemson was at full strength, they most definitely took care of business against Notre Dame. So I feel like, I know that the committee doesn't always take this into account, but they should, but it's just like, this team just played a team that's one of the top two or three teams in college football, and they couldn't measure up. And now that somehow makes them the fourth best team. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. I don't think it makes sense to anybody, especially when the other part of it is the teams that are on the bubble. If they were different teams on the bubble, then mm-hmm. it would make sense. But we have Texas A&M, who's only lost one game. And we have
Cincinnati,
who's lost no games, and mm-hmm. Coastal Carolina, who have lost no games. So if any year were the year for an outlier to get in, it would be this year.
Right.
And the committee essentially said, yeah, whatever. We're still going to let in the people that the blue bloods, the people that we want to go to the college football playoff.
Right. If anything, as opposed to like any other year, like this has really kind of exposed, I don't want to say the biases, but just kind of like the flawed thinking behind a lot of what the committee is doing. I feel like it's kind of baked into the bylines of like the whole committee process. Like they have the word or the term strength of schedule like repeatedly listed under their guidelines. And I feel like that makes it seem like it's a knock on group of five teams as opposed to the power five. Like you're constantly going to be able to say, yeah, Cincinnati's undefeated, but look who they beat, which is somewhat fair, but to the extent that it's being adjudicated here, it feels like it's over. It's like gone too far the other way. The pendulum has swung to negatively impact teams that quite frankly don't deserve that kind of treatment.
Like Big 12 shouldn't even be in the discussion.
They're
terrible this season, you know.
Well, yeah, and they aren't like fully, to be honest, but like with like Notre Dame, like again, we just saw them lose to a team that's in the top four definitively, and now they're going to play the best team in the country. Like what is the logic behind this? Like, well, you couldn't beat number two, so now let's see if you can beat number one. It's like, okay, like an even more complete team.
What gets me is they're, and not just the committee, but I'm sure lots of other people would say, well, if Cincinnati or Coastal or any of them got in, they would get obliterated by whatever team they played. But so did Notre Dame. They just played one of those teams that got obliterated. So what's going to be any different between them getting obliterated and Notre Dame getting obliterated?
Right. Yeah. So did Michigan State when they played Alabama. So did Washington when they played Alabama. There have been blowouts like every single year. So did Oklahoma last year against LSU. Blowouts are kind of, I don't want to say baked in, but like it's not something I'm familiar to the playoff.
Well, because there's such a big gap between 1 and 2 and 3 and 4.
To what you're arguing, even if the blowout is a potential, it's not, it shouldn't be like something that's barring the team that went undefeated, because to the extent that we have available data points that show how good a team is, this team has, you know, passed them all that are available. Yep. And with respect to the blowouts, I mean, let me remind you, like Notre Dame has been part of multiple blowouts in the playoffs. So like, it's almost like every time they're in the playoff, they get beaten off the field. And so like, what is the justification behind this decision? I know like there are certain, you know, terms that they pull out or certain reasons, but they don't really pass muster. I feel like this is kind of a farce.
Yeah, I think I have two things on this. Number one, I think we all now realize that the playoff, and if I'm not mistaken, we must have talked about this a year ago. I almost feel like I'm repeating myself, but the CFP, the playoff, when it first came out, I loved it. And I still love the idea of a four-team playoff. But as we've seen, it's less about the best four teams, more about who the committee feels like should be in there. And that's why with Notre Dame and Ohio State. Now, Ohio State, of course, I've been very vocal about not thinking they deserve to be in the playoff, mainly because they only played 6 games. Could they be part of the top 4 teams if we just look at it in black and white? Yeah, sure. I could see them being one of the top 4 teams. However, I think it should be based a little bit more on merit. And I know that's kind of asking a lot for the NCAA. the fact that they got in, I guess I was pretty upset at first, but now I'm like, okay, you know, that's passable, I guess. But I still don't like how they changed their rules throughout the entire season, going from the beginning where they said they weren't playing football and then they were. They changed the rules to get into the Big Ten championship game. They even changed the COVID restrictions, if I'm not mistaken, for this championship week, I guess, or for the semifinal. I guess it was 21 days or something.
Now it's being knocked down to 17 days.
Right. Just so they could, you know, it's just like, I feel like, yeah, you know, good football team, but all that aside, I don't know. I kind of don't have a lot of respect for the program just because they've changed the rules as they've they've gone throughout the season. And then to echo all both of your points on Notre Dame, yeah, they just got beat by one of the top four teams. And then I think if a solution, and like Jose was saying, this does expose kind of possibly maybe the need for maybe six and have a, I guess one and two would have the bye. So let's say Alabama Clemson has the bye, and then Ohio State, Notre Dame, whatever, they would then play two other teams. And I think it would be awesome to have two at-large bids, if you will, that being Cincinnati and Coastal. What do y'all think about that?
It's, you know, a good idea. But I think the thing that we also have to, like, keep in mind and remember is that part of, like, the thing that's working against the Group of Five teams are the teams that we think are very good but aren't in a Power Five, you know, conference, even like the independents, like a maybe a BYU in the future, is that, you know, the rules are kind of set in place to where they, like, would, like, again, strength of schedule is, like, repeated in the byline. So, like, if they're like relying on it that much, then it's always going to be like, yeah, but let's think about the teams that played the team, the quote real teams, you know? So, like, I'm not saying like it's not possible for Cincinnati to get into the top six, but, like, I mean, we saw Iowa State get all the way up to six, even though, you know, even though they're a great team, but quite frankly, they shouldn't belong there. And like a Texas A&M, which is like, they're good, but their best win was against a Florida team that now has three losses. And
they also got beat by Bama.
Yeah, and they got blown out by Bama, for like the number one team. So now we're supposed to what? So, like, why were they number five? They should have been in the teens. Maybe they'd like top 10, maybe 10 or 9. But to be that close, I feel like the committee is going to constantly position, you know, brand name teams in those areas where there is potential to go. See, there's a reason that, like,
especially this year,
kept falling behind, because there was a potential that they could break into a point where they had like a chance, and they fell to eight, and then they fell to nine, despite the fact that they didn't play and they didn't lose.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I don't think anyone is blind to the fact that there are some other motives, which is ratings. Of course, the Notre Dame rating is, I mean, that's massive. And for considering 2020 was 2020 and all the lost revenue that the NCAA experienced, like everyone else, I guess, that had to play a factor. It's like they're trying to make up as much as they can. And so, of course, you know, I'm not shocked at all that both those teams, Ohio State, Notre Dame, they both have a huge fan base across the country, especially in the case of Notre Dame, where, you know, NBC televises their games like every single week. So clearly, you know, the thing about college football that I used to appreciate was that it was all about the sport. You know, the idea is the players aren't getting paid, I guess you could say, compared to NFL. I mean, who knows? A lot of programs are doing something, but at the end of the day, it's a lot more pure football than maybe even the NFL to some extent. You know, NFL is a great product, but, you know, it's a lot of people just playing and getting paychecks and things like that. Whereas in college football, some of these guys will never play football again. That's the idea about it. And so if we're kind of making money-making decisions to determine the best team, it's kind of where I just take a step back and I'm like, there needs to be changes. And I don't know what, there's just so many flawed things about college football that, you know, that you could try and fix. But this is one of those things where I'm like, are these really the four best teams, or are they the four teams the NCAA wanted to be there?
Right.
Yeah. I think, I was just going to say, I just think that by not having six teams and not having bids to teams like A&M or even Cincinnati, it takes away a lot of what makes college football fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that to me, the fun in watching college football is like watching Boise State beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yes, like exactly.
2007. Like, everybody remembers that game.
Oh, yeah.
Because they got a shot to play a big school.
Right.
And I'm not saying that some of the bowl games won't live up to that or have that type of excitement.
Right. But
we will never get to see something like that if the committee has anything to say about it. And that, to me, is terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point, Abden, because, like, the thing about college football is that it's so – there's, like, so much diversity and variety. There's, like, so many teams, and, like, it's a lot of schools and, you know, conferences have a very distinct flavor or kind of, like, they're all, like, different to a certain extent, and they all have, like, different things that they bring to the table. And right. The more things like these keep happening, the more it kind of takes away from, like, the enriching experience that college football can be. Like, yes. It's better whenever, like, more teams have a potential to, like, have representation in such a big spot. And quite frankly, if I'm a group of five, like, conference or, like, a team, I would try to, you know, Kirk Herbstreit said that we should, like, those teams should, like, take the high road, or those, like, conferences should take the high road. But I say no, like, don't do that. Make noise. Yeah. Just say anything and everything that you want to say about this situation and make it public. Make this, put pressure on the people that are in power in order to, like, change or to, like, you know, actually, this is supposed to be a meritocracy, kind of. You're supposed to, like, the teams that win are supposed to be able to have a shot. And if they're never going to get a shot, then it's like, well, then what's the point of them having an investment in the system? Just keep making noise. Just keep, like, rattling cages and just, like, exert whatever political pressure you can in the system.
100%. And ways of doing that, I think, would be, you know, about the people who are making the schedules, you know, being able to schedule some of those, whether it be a group of five versus a power five, that needs to happen more often. So, you know, I feel like that would be a start, right? Where we're always talking about strength of schedule. And that is usually one of the knocks for some of the, I guess, undefeated teams in the group of five. It could be, is like, okay, their strength of schedule, who did they really beat? And if we can add those, you know, have a few non-conference games and replace it, you know, with some of those Division II opponents that a lot of Power Five teams will ultimately play, and put maybe some of those group of five teams on the schedule, I think that's at least a step in the right direction. And then, you know, the rest can be, because then it would make that argument a lot better if, let's just say, Cincy played, heck, Bama, and let's say they pulled an upset, and then it's like, well, they went undefeated and they beat Bama or something, like, or beat an SEC team or something, or a Big 12 team, and have a really good win on the resume. I think that goes a long way, but either way, I think it's all kind of convoluted at this point.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of counter that point, well, let's look at Coastal Carolina, who beat BYU, who is a top 20 team, and they're not even, there's no way they're getting into the college football playoff, or we're going to get into the college football playoff. So it hurt BYU a ton, but it didn't really help Coastal Carolina any. And it's like, well, what was the point of that? You know, and Coastal didn't have to play that game.
They taken
that week off. So could a BYU, to that same point, but still, you know,
there's no benefit. Like, even if they do the things that we're, like, mentioning, like, the door is still locked to that.
Exactly.
Like, the goalposts will constantly move for them, but constantly move, like, farther and farther away from them and closer to the Power Five. So,
exactly. Like, yeah. And it just, I mean, think about it. Think about the most exciting, best game that you watched this year for college football. My opinion was Coastal Carolina versus.
That was a fantastic game.
And why was it good? You know,
because they were fighting.
Both teams were very good. There was parity there.
It was a play, that was essentially, they treated that like a playoff game. I mean, it ultimately really, I guess it wasn't, but still. It
kind of felt, and that's the shame of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And also, like, even like this year was a little bit different because there wasn't the opportunity for the group of five schools to actually play Power Five because a lot of the conferences went like conference only games. So that hurt them. But even that, like Louisiana played one of the highest ranked Big 12 teams, Iowa State, and they beat the doors off of them. And they were like hardly ever ranked at all this year. I mean, granted, they lost, but they weren't like even in the top 25 for like a good period. And that's like, but they just beat, they beat the team that you are saying is like number six in the country.
Who was that?
Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little strange. The criteria is just very selective.
So we'll open this up real quick. In the current format, what would you be comfortable with as a top four? Since this is the current format, who would you be comfortable with as the top four right now?
I would be okay with Notre Dame being out and anybody between Coastal, A&M, and Cincinnati. Preferably probably Cincinnati, then maybe Coastal, and then A&M. Or, you know, I would be okay with even A&M being in, but I would more so think that Cincinnati should have the shot because they're undefeated.
I agree on A&M, even though part of me, A&M over Notre Dame for sure. Even though I would probably even move A&M up to third so they don't have to play Alabama.
Well, to that point too, it's like
they did get beat by them.
Yeah, but they played Florida and they beat Florida. Right. Florida took Alabama to the fourth quarter, you know. So, you know, things can change when it comes to that. But,
right, yeah.
But especially later in the season, you know, things are a little bit different. But, yeah, that's the only reason why I think A&M should at least have had some type of a shot was because they beat Florida and Florida took A&M too.
All right. My top four would be like Alabama, Clemson, Cincinnati and Coastal Carolina. That's who
I'd be pretty cool. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, that's it. The Blue Bloods versus the up and coming or the smaller, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason why I'm okay with Ohio State is because technically they are
undefeated.
And they have
they have a lot of talent, but I also feel like to a certain extent they're at a bit of a disadvantage, and I don't want to say like a disadvantage like poor them, but it's just like this team, like think about like a regular season and like a team that's six games in, they're like still, I'm gonna say they're still trying to figure things out, but not everything is like the cake isn't baked fully. Like most things are set and like they kind of have an identity, but like six games in, like when you're like 8 or 10, that's when like things are really rolling and like all cylinders are a go.
Mm-hmm.
This team is kind of like, they're very good, but like they were close with Northwestern for a little bit. And
first time.
I feel like normally they would just blow the doors off Northwestern more. Like it wouldn't have been like, I'm not saying it was close, but I feel like it would have been like maybe a 44 or 49, you know, to 10.
Yeah.
Something like that. And now they're going to go play Clemson. And so like, that's going to be like a pretty interesting matchup.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll still be tuning in. I guess it really we all kind of agree that Bama and Clemson are the top two, and that's been the case really for the last 5 years. I mean, it's been,
there's some fatigue with some people, and I can't blame them, you know. It's just like those two are the best, but you know, if they are that good, then you know they kind of deserve to be there. But it's more like, but give us the variety of like another team outside of the Blue Bloods, you know, especially considering that they should have been seen as teams that earned it, you know.
It's just a tough, I think it's at the end of the day, it comes down to the bottom line, and it's a tough year for it. As much as I think we think it makes sense for these teams to get a shot, which if any year it's this year, right? But if any year it's also this year for them to be making financial decisions, I think. And I think that's what we're seeing, unfortunately. But I think at the end of the day, it's probably going to be Bama and Clemson. I mean, do either of you think Ohio State or Notre Dame can win?
I think Ohio State maybe has a chance. You know, for all of what I just said, they do have a lot of talent. So, like, yeah. If they manage to, because, like, the restrictions are kind of down now, so they should be able to play. I don't know how much practice they're going to be able to get in, considering, like, COVID regulations. But if they're running on all cylinders, then maybe, yeah, that's going to be a, and plus it's a revenge spot for Ohio State, considering how last year went.
I mean, do you think either of them have a shot?
Not really, but
yeah, me neither.
But, you know,
I think Notre Dame's going to just get destroyed. And oh, yeah. That, and like, the one of the maybe upsides, well, there's, yeah, one of the potential upsides is, in this is that once everybody sees how bad Notre Dame gets beaten on a public stage by Alabama, it might be the impetus for change. It might be like, we can't keep doing this.
I think you're right. And I also think it would just mean expanding the playoff, I think, if anything, because it's, that's the only, if we're just talking about how the NCAA looks at things, and let's just say it's revenue driven, then two more playoff games, more ratings. I mean, at the very minimum, if you're going to not shoehorn, but if you're going to put in a group of five or whoever into the playoff discussion and have them on national TV and whatnot, well, at least now you have those extra games out there, those two extra games to get the ratings and sell the advertising and tickets and whatnot.
I will say just one more thing. Like, you know who kind of low-key won this whole ordeal? I'd say like A&M kind of won. Not because, you know, people are saying like, whoa, they got jobbed because they didn't get in. But I would kind of look at it that, like, I don't feel like A&M had a lot of business being number five in the nation just because of how their, you know, game with Alabama went and how they've kind of squeaked by in a lot of games where, you know, if they really are the number five team in the nation or potentially top four, they should have like blown out certain opponents. I feel like they get to now say like, we got robbed here. They get to be aggrieved without like having the potential of getting blown out again by Alabama in the playoffs.
So wrapping that up, final picks right now, since our next episode will probably come after this, the championship. So I'll start. I'm going to say Clemson wins it against Alabama.
Yeah,
that's my pick.
You say Clemson, Alabama.
Yeah, Clemson, Alabama in the championship.
Clemson wins.
Clemson.
You know, I didn't think of Clemson as like a potential win. I feel like I thought Bama all the way, but just because they've been so explosive on offense, but
which is that kind of different for Alabama.
Yeah, but they probably haven't played anything like that Clemson defense because it's just really, really good when it's like when they're all there. I'm gonna say Bama.
Yeah, I mean it's,
but I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean you could really go either way. I think it really just goes to show, especially in a year like this. Again, I would say they're definitely just a cut above anybody right now, I think, and I doubt the semifinals will be any interesting, but what could be interesting are the other bowl games. So, question for the group, what are some bowl games that you're going to be tuning into?
I mean, honestly, most of them, but like the ones that will be the best games.
Yeah,
I think a lot Cincinnati, of them are going to be in the
background. Yeah, okay.
Cincinnati, Georgia will be a great game.
Definitely.
Cincinnati has something to prove.
Peach Bowl.
And then I like A&M and North Carolina. I think, honestly, all the schools that didn't get in, I think they're going to have really interesting bowl games. And even, who is it there? Oh, OU versus, who are they playing?
Florida.
Florida, yeah. Yep. I think those would be the most interesting games to watch.
And we got to mention, since we were talking about Coastal earlier, they got Liberty, which I guess that's a decent game, but I guess it would have been a little bit more fun if they played
else.
Like if they played an OU or if they played a Florida or one of the Power Fives. I would love to see it. I mean, if it's not going to be in the playoffs, let's see if they can stack up in a New Year's Six Bowl.
They should have played one of those teams. I agree. Liberty was somebody who they were scheduled to play, who I think they would have most likely beat. Liberty is not bad, but they've lost a game, and they're not Power Five.
They were pretty good, though. I kind of did want to see that game when it was scheduled. I mean, game day was there for a reason, but
yeah,
I'm like 49-51 on that one. I feel like I kind of agree with you guys a little bit there.
I just wish that they would have had a shot to play somebody a little bit more potent to see what they could do, especially considering they beat BYU. But yeah, and I don't like Q3, so.
Right. Also would have been like made a much better point for like what we've been arguing for. Like if they got like a, you know, top conference team, if you will, like that would have shown and they beat them. That would have been like, listen, you were wrong.
Part of your ways. That's kind of why
you can atone, you know.
What about, this is an interesting one that I'm not sure how I feel about it, but Iowa State and Oregon on the Fiesta Bowl. Iowa State, they looked like they were about to come back against OU. Oregon, I mean, I don't even remember Oregon this year, honestly. Was Oregon good? I guess so.
They were okay. They lost, I think, a couple of games that they probably should have won, but
Oregon's like been up and down. But for the most part, they're like a good team, not like a great team. It's definitely a team that's like a year away from being like potentially pretty good, potentially. Yeah, I know they won the Pac-12 championship, but like full season winning a Pac-12 championship.
Right.
Without the Washington issue there.
Yeah, actually, I'm just looking at their schedule. It wasn't that big. Wrapping up. We got about a minute left for college football. Heisman hopefuls. Do we have any candidates? It kind of slipped my mind, but I guess I'm going to have to probably vote for the Alabama quarterback.
Mac Jones?
Yeah. See, I don't even know his name. Mac Jones. I would say after watching Trevor Lawrence, and I'll probably talk more about him later in our awards, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, he looked amazing. And I think if he didn't get hurt, maybe for a couple games and I guess he had COVID. I think he probably could have won the Heisman, but I'm sure he'll be in the top discussion. But any other ones come to mind? Who are the finalists?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say somebody that's definitely not even going to be in the discussion, but maybe should be, was Kyle Pitts out of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Yeah.
Incredible. He's going to be amazing in the pros.
Yeah, you're going to see that guy on Sundays. When it comes to like the Alabama issue, like there's like really good players everywhere. So it's kind of like almost helpful and hurtful to any potential Heisman candidate. Cause you could be like, well, it's just everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
Cause there's Najee Harris, Devontae Smith, and Mac Jones that are all kind of up there in that echelon. For me, I'd say like, you know, give it to a wide receiver, give it to Devontae Smith. You know, I feel like it's hard to run and outpace people and like constantly like juke people out and like do punt return touchdowns that are incredible. He would be my pick.
I think if we're talking skilled position players and not a quarterback, then I would even say Najee Harris.
Oh yeah, he was incredible in the SEC championship
game. I mean,
well, he's not even a starter. Like,
right? Oh, he's not?
Yeah, he's not even a starter. The starter.
That's crazy. I didn't even know that.
I would also say, like, you know, to Andy's point, like on Trevor Lawrence, like, I feel like he also made like a pretty good case, just by virtue of the fact that when he wasn't there, they lost. But when he was there, they blew out the team that
destroyed. And if anyone has seen that throw that he just put on a rope.
Oh, it was a lot of throws. That guy is going to be.
And even in the middle of the game, which last thing I'll say is, I hope he stays healthy, because he even makes it a point in one of the interviews they had during the game where he's talking about he's not afraid, you know, he's willing to take a hit and things like that. A lot of people question, you know, is he going to get injured and whatnot? But that does kind of transition to who could possibly get him next. Will it be the Jets or will it be the Jaguars? NFL. Who's going to get him? I think it's probably today, as we saw, the Jets won a game. They're not going defeated for the season. So
technically, Jacksonville is in first.
Can anyone be good for that franchise? Let's just throw that out there. I know it's the NFL and anything could happen, but for Trevor Lawrence, would you want to try and pull an Eli Manning and force a trade? I don't know.
Might not be a bad idea. I mean, for his own well-being, but
worked for Eli.
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. I think the Jets may get him.
I don't even know what it would be. I mean, I think for him personally, I would imagine Jacksonville's closer to home.
Yeah.
And you don't have the spotlight of New York and potentially the toxic franchise as well with New York. I guess it's maybe the worst of two evils. I don't know. So this year has been really interesting. And there's been one very horrible division in the NFC East that will somehow put a team in the playoffs. And it's pretty incredible that the Cowboys, after a win today, may actually have a chance to make a run.
They still do. Everybody else will reach out, but
you know,
that's even a possibility. It's crazy.
That's insane.
Today's game was fun to watch. I'll say that much. I think Dalton has been manageable or serviceable as a backup since his concussion and COVID. I think he's recovered, but you know, they're still probably going to have the worst defense ever. And it's hard for me to. I think that if we're talking about structural changes with the playoffs, I think the NFL may think about that too after this year, where maybe we don't put a team with a losing record in the playoffs, where you'll probably have a division like the NFC West, where they'll have potentially three teams that deserve to go to the playoffs. There's going to be someone left out, essentially. And I think they may have to change that next year for the divisions, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they should keep that division winner gets to go. And
think.
Yeah, I mean, like we just said with the college football, like sometimes it's fun to have a really bad team. And
no, I'm just kidding. You literally never know. The Giants when they won the Super Bowl.
Right. Or
yeah.
Like the Seahawks when they beat the Saints.
Yeah, they had a losing record.
That when Tony Romo fumbled the
I think that was a year after. But yeah, it was I'm just looking at the playoff picture. Honestly, I don't really see anyone else that could. I think if it's anyone, it might be the Cardinals, but they won. NFL has been crazy this year. And has anyone stood out to you in terms of like who should be the MVP, or are there any teams that stick out in terms of making a run this year?
Tom Brady. No, I'm just kidding.
As far as, Chiefs, I think, are going to probably be there at the end. They just seem to be very good. Cleveland is surprising, considering I hate them.
Yeah, Baker.
Surprising that they could really, you know, make it to the end.
Pretty wild.
Titans are going to be Tough.
Mm.
I know that they got beat by the Steelers, but the Steelers, I don't know. That team is very strong.
Yeah.
I can't tell if they're the real deal or not. But if Derrick Henry keeps running the way he's running,
yeah,
they've got a shot. But those are both two AFC teams. But as far as the NFC goes, I don't know. That's kind of,
yeah,
it's kind of tough.
I think with the Packers, they're probably going to be, I guess I'll say they're the favorite for me in the NFC. But going back to the AFC real quick, yeah, obviously I think Chiefs are going to be the favorite there. But I'm going to be rooting for the Bills. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm rooting for the Bills to do something. This was the first time.
We'll release another rap record.
Please.
First time in 12 years, if I'm not mistaken, that someone else besides the Patriots won the AFC East. I know that fan base is happy. I mean, they're 11-3. They're going to be someone to be reckoned with. I really think the AFC playoffs are going to be juicy. I think the top teams are in the AFC. Because if you factor in the Ravens and the Browns, like the Ravens now look like they're turning it back on. Like having watched them against the Cowboys and then the next week against the Browns last week, that was a fantastic game. Seriously. I think they're going to be in it. If you factor in the Chiefs and then you have the Bills as well, along with the Steelers, it's going to be a fun AFC playoffs, I think.
I just worry about part of me doesn't think Cleveland is as good as they appear to be because of
that
game with the Ravens. I mean, I don't know. It just, Lamar Jackson had to do it entirely with his feet, and don't think that can happen.
We got to talk about that real quick. That was probably, I mean, first of all, that game was
epic. It was a fantastic game.
In the dramatic moments of, you know, Lamar Jackson, we can all speculate if he had to go to the bathroom or if he was getting.
I think he could get a cramp.
Yeah. Maybe it's a comp. Someone threw this out on the ticket. He said it could have been both. I mean,
that's true.
You know, maybe he had knocked it out while he was getting an IV shot. Because, he was gone for a series.
He was gone for a pretty long time, considering, I don't know about y'all, but it didn't take me that long to.
And then the backup, his name's escaping me already, but. McSorley. Yeah, Trace McSorley. So he gets hurt, and then all of a sudden, like Willis Reed, Lamar Jackson pops out, and the first thing he does, or one of the first things he does, is get a touchdown out there. That was a fantastic game, and I think just watching Lamar Jackson, I knew he was good, but just he's so dynamic, I think, and so fast. And seeing him play, like, this is the first time I kind of really paid attention to it, and he is just – he's something else. He's fast. It's crazy. But yeah, I guess those are kind of the favorites, I think, for the NFL. We'll see how the playoffs break out. What's also coming up though, NBA is starting this week. That's crazy to think about, number one. And we live in a market, at least Abden and I live in a market where we have the hottest player in the NBA, Luka.
Hey, man, don't forget about the Nets.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. So we both have kind of huge kind of media talking points for the upcoming season. The Mavs, the Nets are going to have KD and Kyrie, new coach and Steve Nash.
I think it's going to work. Just going to put that out there.
We'll start there then. I mean, with the Nets, it's a really interesting dynamic with Kyrie and KD. Both of those guys have unique personalities. They're both vocal in some ways. Kyrie has his, they're almost like, if y'all saw it the other day at the Boston game where he was, I guess, burning sage to eliminate negative energy.
God.
I hate both of them, but yeah.
And I think the sideline reporter or whatever after the game was like, so what did you think of that? And then Katie was just like, I mean, that's just him. Like, I think that's how they've kind of come to do. And then they even did an Instagram live, which I think, Jose, you may have shared that with me. Someone did, where it was Kyrie and Katie, and they were just talking about, like, all right, who's going to get more shots and who's going to do this and that. I thought that was kind of entertaining. My thing is with Steve Nash, one of my favorite players of all time. Loved him as a Mav. I hated to see him go when he went to the Suns, and he subsequently knocked us out of the playoffs that year. Had a couple of MVP years after that, after he left the Mavs also. So do y'all really think he can coach? Because I'm kind of skeptical.
I do.
You think? I know he knows the game, but did they hire him to specifically handle these two personalities where maybe KD had a relationship with him because he Nash was in Golden State as a consultant or whatever? And then I guess, you know, Kyrie is interesting too, but I just hope the personalities can mesh, because as we've seen, two big alpha personalities to a certain extent don't always work. If you look at the Houston situation, what happened there, they're falling apart. Mm-hmm. With Westbrook being traded, and then Harden doesn't want to be there, but he's also eating a lot of honey buns, it seems like. So I'm glad basketball is back. I think it's much needed as the NFL is winding down, and the NBA has really gotten ahead of, you know, having a really short off season. And now they're going to be playing in their own stadium. So that'll be interesting. They released the schedule in two halves. So the first half is released, and then they haven't even released the second half yet. So I think there's going to be more strategic traveling and situations.
I think it's going to have to be that way, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, and this is another NBA topic with Luka, I think, in the Mavs. So I was kind of vocal in that I was not happy with the Mavs offseason. I am a admitted diehard Mavs fan, full disclosure. So I technically will have just higher expectations than maybe I need to for this team. But I guess my thing is, when you have a player who's, you know, top five player, you could argue, in the league right now, you got to go for it. But I also think too, what the Mavs did, which is add Josh Richardson, you know, James Johnson. You added some real tough defensive players. You drafted the guy from Arizona, who was an amazing defensive player. You had another guy from Colorado who was really good at defense. They're focusing on the right thing. So I'm going to go ahead and say that they're going to take a step up this year. I did say they could win a championship, and I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think they can. I'm not saying they will. They could win a championship in the near future.
Wow.
Maybe not this year. How about that?
What a moderate sports take. Dang, Andy. They're going to win a championship this year. They're going to win 75 games. The most winningest team that has ever been. Jordan's going to be like, damn, I wish I was on that team instead of the Bulls.
I'm not too far from that. I'm really not too far from that, honestly.
I think they win a championship within the next 5 years. I don't know if it's this year. I don't think that it would be. I do think he wins MVP.
He's the favorite.
As long as he doesn't get injured. Fingers crossed.
He's the favorite.
Yeah. And I do think that they get better. Maybe even conference finals. I can't, you know, I don't think they have it, but I think they need one more piece. And I think
I agree.
It's like going to be in a subsequent year.
I think they need to get Seth Curry back somehow.
I mean, I think they made the right move, because they basically replaced him with, they drafted that guy who's a sharpshooter,
mm-hmm.
I think from Indiana.
Terrell.
Yeah. Terry or whatever.
Hi, Terry. Yeah, he's going to be good. And he looks good in the preseason. He's hitting threes that.
Yeah. So I think all in all, you know, it wasn't a flashy offseason, as, you know, we always will try to have expectations for Mavs offseason and see what happens. But I think that the best part for the Mavs is it's just so crazy that we went from Dirk for 21 straight years. And yeah, you know, towards the end, he wasn't great by any means, but still had him on the team. And then it just gets passed to Luka so seamlessly. It's like, I really never, like, once we won that championship in 2011, you know, I was happy. It was like, whatever happens for the next decade, whatever, we got a championship. And then it came to the realization, okay, Dirk's going to be gone. Now what? And that, until we got Luka, I thought the Mavs were going to be just kind of mediocre. I don't know. Like, I never, I didn't expect this. It's just crazy. I just hope he pans out. I hope it's not all hype. It doesn't seem like it is. You know.
Yeah, he's really good. And it's just,
everyone
it's
around.
It doesn't seem like a fluke. So.
Yeah.
Better than Jordan. I'll say it right now. I don't care.
So I guess we'll go ahead and say it. Do y'all think the Lakers are going to probably repeat? Are there any other teams you think that can challenge them this year?
I don't know. It's kind of hard.
Maybe I feel like they'll probably make the Western Conference Finals, but I don't know if they're like actually make it to the finals. I think the more interesting question is actually, who do you guys think is going to make it out of the East?
I really think, I think Milwaukee will be there, but I think if everything with the Nets goes the right direction and it takes off, because KD looks like he hasn't missed a beat in some of the preseason games, which that's another thing, you know, having an Achilles injury used to be, I mean, it still kind of is. If you have an Achilles injury and you play in the NBA, that's usually like, you're not coming back the same player. KD, I mean, it's early, but KD looks just like KD. And if he's KD and Kyrie is who he is, and then they were already a really good team, I think Brooklyn definitely will be in there in the discussion. So I think it'd be them or Milwaukee coming out. I can't think.
I'm thinking about the Heat.
I was about to say, the Heat will be there too. I just, I don't know. I don't want to call it a fluke year where they got to the finals, because they're a very well-coached team and they have players. The Celtics will be in the discussion, I think, also. Heck, even the Sixers, you never know. But I think it's going to be Nets and Bucks in the final, Eastern final.
Yeah.
And then,
I agree.
Yeah. No faith in the Celtics. Dang.
You know, you never know. I think Jason Tatum's going to take a step up for sure. And the rest of that team, they traded Hayward. So, and for the West, I would say, yeah, sure, the Lakers can be the favorite because they reloaded and they actually have better role players now, sadly enough.
Well, and you also don't know if Harden gets traded. I think that will drastically. And it sounds like he may be going to the East from what the way things are shaping out to be.
And that the Mavs calling it right now.
That's funny.
Don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I don't think as good as he is, we don't need that. Well, cool. So this is the last podcast of the year. We're going to do something kind of on the fly here with our end of year awards. This is something I did last year just for fun. You know, and maybe it kind of gives us a little more credibility. Who knows? Maybe if we, you know, at somebody, if they win one of our awards, then maybe they'll like our post and we get some recognition.
They'll share us on their story on all media platforms. They'll call us out. They'll reach out to our agents.
Exactly.
We'll get bigger deals. We're going to get sponsorship from MeUndies.
We'll start, I guess, you know, with kind of how we do the podcast. We'll start with college football player of the year. Last year, pretty obvious, it was Joe Burrow. That's who won it. Anyone that comes to mind, I mean, my vote personally is going to be Trevor Lawrence, because I think he's going to ultimately win the championship. And I just think he was the best player this year, even though he had COVID. I think he's my pick. Y'all have any other ones you'd want to put on that?
It's kind of hard pedestal in the COVID year, but I would probably go with Mac Jones, maybe.
Okay.
From Alabama.
I will go with Devontae Smith.
Okay. I like that. Now we'll do NFL. So last year, I think it was a Lamar Jackson year. For me, I'm picking the guy. Yeah, maybe I'm a little biased on this one because I'm just a big fan of the guy. But also, I think he was the breakout player for me. K1, Kyler Murray. I think he's having a great year, all things considered. I'd like to see his team do a little bit better instead of squeaking in the playoffs. But I think Kyler Murray is just explosive in not just running the ball, but he's shown that he is a really good passer too. I think he's going to end up having over 1,000 rushing and 4,000 passing. If I'm not mistaken, no one's ever done that. I think he is the new kind of, you know, new up-and-coming guy. Well, last year it was Lamar Jackson. Everyone was talking about him as the MVP. I don't think Kyler's the MVP yet, but I mean, we've seen him do some crazy things that I don't think anyone really, even though he was the number one pick, won the Heisman, I still think there was a lot of people when he came in the league that thought, well, I don't know, maybe he's too small. He's showing that he's just faster than others, but yeah.
For me, I'm going to go with Chase Young.
Ooh, I like that pick. Okay.
I think he's been fantastic. And I think that a little bit.
He is very good.
Overlooked just because of everything else that's going on. You know, defensive players get overlooked a lot, but he's just a monster.
He's a monster. I mean, I agree. That's a good, solid pick. He's just a huge physical specimen. I can't even explain it. Like, there's no one like him. They're only like Washington is kind of mediocre as they were this year.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they invested, if you look at their previous draft picks, they literally are all defense and it's starting to pay off. They have a pretty good defense.
Good on defense. It's the only thing winning them games.
What about you, Jose?
I'll go with Chase Young just because it sounded like a good answer and I haven't been following the NFL at all. So. Sorry.
Sure. Moving on, coach of the year. Last year, this was kind of a interesting random award. This can be from any sport. So last year, I think we kind of picked Matt Rhule for what he did at Baylor. As we can see this year, it really was the coach and maybe Jose for Baylor. I'm going to go ahead and say Rick Bowness is my coach of the year for what he did to get the Stars to the final. And if anyone has seen the documentary, We're Not Going Home, you'll kind of see his leadership showing to kind of, you know, bring that team together, I think. And then, of course, he's now the permanent coach. He came in as an interim. So I liked his coaching job this year. That was my pick.
Yeah, I was gonna say that as well, but I'm gonna pick somebody else because I don't want to have the same.
My bad.
No, it's all good. I figured you were gonna choose it. I mean, I think most people would. I mean, how could you not?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic job. Part of me wants to go with Jamie Chadwell from Carolina.
Okay.
God damn it. That was going to be my pick.
You can pick the Cincinnati coach.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the.
Yeah, because Jamie Chadwell, he just has done a terrific job there. Like, that team was picked to be like close to last in their conference, and the job he's done there has been incredible, especially considering that like 1 week turnaround against BYU and to just be defeated. It's just been a terrific job.
And agreeing to do that game, like just having the, you know, having the guts, if you will, to get, put yourselves out there against a team is, you know, good timing. And also, you know, not a lot of coaches would or programs would do that. And I think he was a big part of it. Also, to, you know, Abden's point, he shared this before in terms of that offense that they run, right? It's a pretty disciplined. What kind of is it? The
pretty innovative. I think it's a spread.
Spread option.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they run the ball. We saw it every play in that game, essentially. They were really like disciplined on that style of play, and it worked, you know?
Yeah, they're really good. And it looks like Coastal Carolina agrees because they just signed him to an extension through 2027.
Good for him. I wonder how much that is going to be.
Oh, yeah. It's probably going to be a hefty one. It's really dumb that no school, like no big, like bigger name school signed him.
I think maybe South because Carolina. Of the scheme. I would think that was
probably. I guess, but it's still like, I think come on, man.
Yeah, if you have somebody like Kyler Murray or something like that, it's going to work for you.
But you could get better,
so.
Yeah.
And then, Jose, who's your coach?
I could choose somebody else, but like Jamie Chadwell, I'm gonna go ahead and also say that too.
I like that.
Luke Fickle was good this year too, but that's
he's looked good, but he was also like good last year, but like the turnaround Jamie did is just like undeniable for me.
He had more to work with, let's just say that
for sure.
Quickly, I guess on NBA Player of the Year, I think it should be unanimous. I think Luka should be it. I mean,
Hank Kaminsky. I feel like he's been done a disservice by the Sacramento Kings when he got waived.
Guilty Frank.
Yeah. No, it's got to be Luka.
I think Luka. That's pretty unanimous. He was our Player of the Year last year, so this will be a back-to-back win for him.
Be sure to add him.
Starting to think this is rigged.
I mean, you know,
there might be a
bias. A little bit, but I mean, we can justify it in some way, I think, at least with
the strength of schedule, guys.
All right, so last one. This is the most interesting one, I think, is aesthetic of the year. What is one uniform that sticks out above them all this year? I need to think for a second, but I'm almost leaning. You know, last year we did the Stars Winter Classic jersey. And so I don't want to have to go with the Stars again, even though I like their midnight unis that they came out with.
I'm going to go with the Florida Gators throwback uniforms.
Ooh, okay.
From this year.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that up here in a sec.
I don't know if throwbacks can count, but I like them.
Yeah, I just now figured out what mine is going to be. I'm going to go with Austin FC.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
It's also not just their uniform, which if anyone's seen it, it's just basically a vertical black and green stripes, or as Austin FC calls it, Verde. And it's just not only with their uniforms, but it's their entire branding and marketing and everything that has to do with Austin FC. I feel like they have just knocked out of the park, and it's I think they deserve to be recognized in terms of just what they've done to establish a brand for a soccer team in Texas 10 times better than both what Dallas has done and what Houston has done combined. They have done in a matter of a couple of years or so, and they deserve to be like patted on the back. I mean, it's just Austin FC is just it's like a pinnacle in sports marketing. I'll put it that much. They have just nailed everything. And as a guy like me, I mean, I appreciate that type of stuff, kind of working in that industry a little bit. They're just amazing. So I got to give it to Austin on that.
Yeah. I would say, taking it back to college football, the Iowa State all-black uniforms that they used during the championship game. I know they use it a couple times this year, but I feel like it's a really sleek, nice look. It just looked really nice.
Which one was that?
The scheme. It was just black, all black, and then like the Iowa State was like in a different shade. It was, like,
Grayish. The ones that they were wearing against OU yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that one too. Actually, that's a good pick. I really like that whole blackout look. That actually is a really good one. Good choice. Yeah. So we'll post these, I'll post this on our Instagram. We'll put all of them in there. The ones that we picked, and those will be our awards for 2020. Be on the lookout before New Year's Eve. You will see that in our Instagram. 2020 is over, y'all. So we want to thank everybody who's listening right now. And if you listen to us during quarantine, this year, you know, we want to say thank you. And, this year it was a little tough for everybody, but I guess we can just look forward to 2021 and hoping that, bigger things are in store for us, and just, everybody can hopefully get back to normal. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Stay safe, everybody. Wash your hands, wear a mask in public.
Wear your mask.
Practice social distancing, and send us money.
Sports Wave 2020.
One.
Over.